be sharing the stage with Gwen, because I had the good fortune in the 60s to actually do my apprenticeship with Iris Thomas in Leicester and Wales. It was very nice to work with her. I'm just going to read one poem. It's I'm from Clare. We have a group there called the Three-Legged Stool Poets. Those of you who didn't know it beforehand, Clare is divided into three halves, the north, the west, and the east. I learned recently that Tipperary is divided into two thirds, so we're not unusual. And accordingly, our group comprises people from northwest and east Clare. So the poem I'm going to read is Clare Hurler, being in Cork, obviously, and hurling being in the news. It's probably an apt one to read. The other thing is, it's actually a serious enough poem for that. It's about a young boy, 16. His ambition was to play for Clare. And right up to his very, very end, he was an extremely good hurler and would have played for Clare without any doubt. But he died of leukemia at the age of 16. And that happens to be very close to him at the time. So it's called Clare Hurler. I know I will remember him when winter spills over, and the reflection of each high-barked tree in the shallowest of tallow is solemn of reality. And that above all I will remember the father. Reckoning his son's years in scars, that one above the knee a hurling trophy, that one below a blow from a red binny of a cow. What matter that the ventilator, like an old bellows in the corner, had slurred and wheezed away his vital suspiratio? Was that full moon they waked him under, a sort of tenebrae? Then there was the way... The day they buried him in blue and saffron on the hill encircled hill above the town, the sun just shone and shone. There was an irony in the saffron ground. God knows he'd slugged it out enough with death to wear the colours of Clare, just that the damned steroids had made a bald butter of him. Nor do I remember any bird song, Circean chorus. But I do remember death out midwifed. But the long canal be over, when he had already and he was already his mother's pieta. I do remember death out midwife, the scentless oil she massaged his feet with. I can smell that yet.
Good man, Brian. Very, very moving. Very moving indeed. Next up, now we have Tom Maloney. Is this your first time here? Yeah. Good man, he's up. The newcomer, Tom Maloney.
Good day, everybody. I'm Tom Maloney from Broadwood, Mount Edinburgh. I think it's famous for the cause of wrong. Anyway, dubiously so. But here we go. This is a very sad point, by the way, seriously. Eulogy for an ex-partner. On the done on the spur of the moment, indeed, I was trying the empirical route to validate the claim of Hamlet. Many wearing rapiers are afraid of goose quills. What possessed me might have been a forlorn, even a vain wish to check if you were suitable for another life, say, puncturing dried out tea bags. So I gave you a tryout and claim, but you were not cut out to me. So I baited you down and chose the lid on the rubbish bin. not to be damned, and for the sake of posterity, I invite your eulogy with another. Imagining those creative roots, how we traveled together, following the twist of phrase, the angles, how we filled in gaps, the so-called lacunae, and once, on the topic of being, I recalled Heidegger's advice, so we put brackets around it, and got on with everyday life. A workload of frustration, inspiration, pleasure, the crisscrossing of the lines, the restart, the craft, words of nutrition. We wrote about the dark place, the cobwebs and the clarity, till you lost your thirst, broke down in mid-letter, leaving a tear of the track. When I longed to revive you, when I leaned to revive you, at this point, at your last, I confirmed you were dry. Like I said, I just gave you a try with a dried out old tea bag, but you were not cut out to mail. I bedded you down, closing the lid on the bed. Thank you.
Next up now we have an O'Bail staple, someone who's actually been the guest here for just this one month tonight, Ned Harriet.
Thanks. I really enjoyed the guest poetry tonight. Beachcombers. This is about seeing things through the eyes of a child. I was in Westport in Mayo and walking under Crowpatrick, the reek, on Bartra Beach. And this came from it. The reek draped in a sleep, crisp winter day. I walk with friends and my buck-leaping 9-year-old son, while waves swash on Bartra Beach. And we find dinosaur bones, speckled hen's eggs, licorice all sorts, Chinese writing, saber-toothed tiger fangs, and the crown jewels amongst the pebbles on the shore. Now, a very, very short story. A tutor in a fiction writing class asked the group to write a very, very short story, less than 50 words. But it had to have the ingredients of politics, religion, sex, suspense, and sorry, what was the other one? Five ingredients: politics, religion, class, sex, and suspense. And somebody came up with, "Oh Lord," said Lady Lavery, "I'm in the Pudding Club. After that Michael Collins and that Winston Churchill stayed in our house for the weekend. Who done it? It certainly wasn't my husband, Sir John." Thank you.
Next up now we have another sort of Cork and O'Bail regular, and you know him, you love him, you can't get enough of him. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Shane Farrington.
Don't do that to me, Billy. He galloped all night to Macroom. He had lived by the sword in our groom. He stopped there and ate. Fresh horses await. The white witch foretold of his doom. The Stalker. I stop the alley to and fro each day. My evil eye displays a clear intent. My spring is high enough to reach my prey. These lethal plants of mine keep toms at bay. My electric pitch does not embrace lament. I stalk the alley to and fro each day. At every chance I strike without delay. My feral breed does not require consent. My spring is high enough to leech my prey. This broken thrush was doing a slow sachet.
Unlike the other 99%, I walk the alley to and fro each day. I've yet to taste the hooded crow's dismay. He scans the path before each rare descent. My spring's not high enough to teach this prey. Oh yes, I draw a blank some weeks, but say, I never show a sign of discontent, but stalk the alley to and fro each day. My spring is high enough to bleach my prey. Mobile dog wash. It's just across the rows of deadly spinning wheels, where every puppy shows the cleanest pair of heels. Pegasus. Parts merge to enchant, then Zeus, he is gone in one lightning bolt, blowtorch sheet metal. Pre-dawn, I return to spot stars on its flanks, hippocrene shod, wings brushing through north. Catacombs. Cataclysmic squeal of brakes, bold cyclists with outline and toe racing into the orange-hued glimmer. Frozen in a sacred arc on the roadway, mitre-eared, wide-eyed, crozier-tailed, diverse feline congregation, pine needles tang fused with fresh clay. A coffin-hissing explosion of fur, flash of onyx, two devilish tongues dive for bunker cover behind a convivial cannon's headstone in the dead of night. Thank you.
You just up your billing there now. We're going to ask you to kind of keep it, you know, short, as short as possible. Not as short as possible, did we?
Certainly not.
Okay. Next up, we have someone else who's making their Ovale debut tonight, and that I'm personally delighted to introduce tonight. If he hasn't made a break for the window or the, any other escape rooms, ladies and gentlemen, Noel Regan.
The window's closed. Alright, I don't know about keeping it short here, I'll try my best. It's a short story. It's called The Warning. The sea took Kevin Hennessy as he front crawled back to the shore, dragging him out towards the setting sun. And even though Hennessy was a strong and experienced swimmer, and even though he knew not to struggle against the currents like this, because it would waste precious energy, in his panic, he still fought savagely against the flow. His legs beat at the sea, and his arms no longer glided through the water, but pummeled it with clenched fists. But the current was strong and relentless, and kept on pulling him away until soon he was exhausted and stopped fighting. Taken out beyond the shore on the Paritime Islands with the old roofless church on it, his congregation now nothing but weeds and nettles and empty cans of cider, Hennessy just did enough to keep afloat. He kicked his legs and moved his arms only when he felt like he would sink, most of his energy having gone into his wild, panicked struggle. As the current tugged him out into the wide, empty sea, Hennessy wondered if anyone had seen him being pulled away. He had spent the day on the beach, under a hard spring sun, reading and trying to write. There had been others there, but not many. It had been late evening when reading became difficult that he decided to go for a swim. Leaving all his belongings in his backpack, he had stripped to his shorts and dived in, grunting at the cold slap of the sea. Maybe someone did see me being pulled away, he thought, and they are on their way now to get help. Maybe they will be here for me soon. It was such a warm, hopeful thought that, for a moment, the sea didn't seem as cold. But then the thought floated away from him and sank. No one had seen him, he knew. No one was coming for him. He was alone. Floating on his back, Hennessy stared up at the late evening sky. It was clear in a dark blue that bordered on purple in places. He could feel himself rising towards the blue sky and falling again, giving a fluttering rhythm to the sea, as if someone had grabbed the edges of it and shook it like a bedsheet or tablecloth. Looking back, he could see that some lights had come on in the village beyond the shore, signaling the way back. No one will miss me from there, Hennessy thought. He was new to the area, a passer-through, having only rented a bungalow outside the village for the month. Ahead, where the current was taking him, was the dying sun. For some unknown reason, he had expected to see a fireworks show on the horizon, fierce reds and yellows and golds parading around the sun like trumpeteers. But instead, it was an uneventful grey into which the dappled sun dropped. The sea itself was dark and murky, and glaring into it, he could see nothing but himself. His skin had turned the same colour as the sky, that blue, purplish colour, and he could feel his legs and arms beginning to go numb. An intense sense of betrayal was up inside Hennessy then, and was made all the worse because he didn't know where to direct it. He had always thought himself meant for something important, but in his 32 years he hadn't achieved anything that set the world on fire, as his father would have once said. Hennessy knew that up to this moment he hadn't even set off a single spark, and the moments ahead didn't exactly look promising. "Don't take me yet," he begged of the sea, his dry voice carrying far across the water. The ghost of once possible futures floated alongside him on the current, futures he had hoped for but never really worked towards. There was a book he had been writing, or at least trying to write. Even now he could picture the notepad full of empty lines stuffed into his backpack on the shore. He had thought he only needed to start writing and beautiful dancing prose would flow out, perfect first time, but the words would never come. And there was Amy. Despite the time that had passed and the way it ended, he had often thought about trying to get back with her. He certainly didn't regret the experience of her. In fact, he was grateful. He knew not to regret the things he had given everything of himself to, even if they failed. It was the things he had only half attempted, or hadn't attempted at all, that swam closest to him now, nagging. She hadn't been looking for a lover anyway, but a pet, he realized, and he had happily didn't ask for her at the time. Even after the breakup, he had held on, pained and dependent, sniffing around, hoping she would take him back. But floating in the wild sea, he was turning wild himself, out of reach of everyone and everything, except the elements. Hennessy felt free in a way he never had before. Removed from his old failings and weaknesses and attachments, the stirrings of a new life began under his blue, purplish skin, aching to break out and swim to shore and start again. He watched as the sun tossed up a few sparks of red and yellow before it sank under the horizon. It wasn't the fireworks he had been expecting, but it was something. Hennessy saw now with a clarity that dissected his old life. He saw every wrong move, wrong turn, every wasted moment, and on top of all that, he saw how to change it. All he needed was a second chance. But then the truth of the situation began to pull at him, tugging harder than the current and the cold and the overwhelming tiredness that was sneaking up on him. He was too weak to kick now, or thread water, and he could hardly feel his arms or legs. "There will be no second chance," he proved, and as he said to himself, "and you wasted your first and only one." The horizon lost the last of the sun and turned black, and the sea turned black too as it pulled him away. He couldn't even see himself anymore. Looking back at the lights of the village as they flickered like stars in the distance, and then thinking of the wasted hours and days and months and years, he sank into the darkness.
Hopefully you'll be up here again in not distant future. Good man. So, is Hyrule still there? Next up we've got another stage man, Hyrule Abdullah.
I don't write poems very often, so I have very few. So, this is one of them, and it's quite short. A beautiful feeling made my mind up. The water is sure and there and clear, as the night surrenders with lashes of satin, and the morning brings happiness, my dear. You move through the wind and the mist from above. You flicker like ants light in the rooms that are dark. I hope to surround you and shield you from fear, but the dusk is a mistress that won't ever meet. The windows reflect my women afar, the likely to time on the wind with the ground, my tree seems to turn off the green of sincere, my shoulder sheds snow and the blue bell sheds ink.
So, was reiterating on the time thing, you know, time moving on. But so we gotta move with it. So next up, you know, we'll have a Tifon or Reared On. That it was.
Three very short and hastily written poems. First one, number one, is bad poetry. I'm sure that your mother finds you charming, and that those you open your legs to find you worthwhile. But I see you for what you are. I've got no time for you. Kindly fuck off. Number two is about truth. When those chips are down, that back is to the wall, the shoulder is bruised on the grain of the wheel, to the PAYE, the 38-hour weekers, the dog soldiers, the three young children mothers, what time and use do they have for truth? Number four, I have abandoned my children. Dear, poor, vulnerable onion seeds, I don't know what to do with you. I've made an effort to learn of you. I've gone to the stages. I have Googled you. I've prepared you a bed, done my limited best for you. The rest is for you to do. Go find the sun. May you feed me come June.
John, go meet me tomorrow, but I'm not really sure. I'll get finished. So we can go to the Reed Buckley.
Lay me down in the no man's land to rest a while and sword the feud, till the clock has stopped and finally settled inside me. In this place there is the barren rest of the world's wide womb. It casts no stones, lent in soft waves of nothing like blankets. May it close like an eyelid upon me. May my thoughts implode before they catch fire. The dust has settled and there's no way to change that. Let the wind smooth my brow as the sheaves of corn I lie beneath. Let nothing reach me here except the stalks, dancing black silhouettes against the brown. Let all fall out in a cloud of down, for me to make my bed on. Media, I've heard your tales many a time, the wretched you wound, when once again it was found that you had eaten your children. I have no time for your stories of the graces that would lacerate. Lay me down in the no man's land to rest a while, to absorb the fuse that surrounds, till the clock has stopped and finally settled inside me. Find me here when the fuse has cleared, a bawling babe beneath the cabbage, motherless and naked, no longer swallowed, swaddled in cold knowledge. My voice will cover distance.
Thanks for that, Reed. Nothing wrong with that, Reed. That was excellent. Very good, yeah. Super. So next up now we have Paul O'Malley.
I think all of you know what it's like to have written a poem and then to turn it into a poem. This one is called I'll Scarify This Poem. Before taking a shower, I'll scare the bejesus out of it with my rage. The poem won't know what's hit it as I rasp the back, thrust the sharp edge in search of superfluity. Scary stuff. I never know if it's roots I'm tearing up or thatch-lined earthworm dwellings, vigorous scratchings through dead syllables, redundant participles, rape for the sake of the clear way.
I live in Van Meyer.
for the sake of Langmuir, I get it, and for a life lived there. It's called Rain Clouds Gather Over Langmuir. How long since the last drop fell and left the soil sodden drunk? A summer stole by, disguised. Wind and chill washed away dreams of suntan creams and cucumber eyes. Had I flown abroad, I'd know the pride of my prediction. Rain poured, lightning striking twice in Glanmire. Autumn has graced us with a prodigal son. A fortnight blessed with drought. Air tight in the undercurrent of fresh draught. I'll remember this summer, tears unshed from an unwarmed heart, indelible ache, indelible link to that place where pain conceived, nurtured, and flowers like its half sister, love, mirror image of unrestrained creation. Raindrops gather now, the ground has need, and I of rain to oil my mending spirit. Come, my love, come, you rain of life, your bride awaits, ready for an orgasm of hope.
So there's two open records last night now, and it's the double whammy of Cork really in some ways. And first up we have from Tower, near Blarney, near Cork, Mr. Joe Sweeney.
Hello. This is another letter for Maybe Golo, secondary school teacher, and she's writing to the principal, and it recounts another of her startling adventures. Dear principal, 10:15 a.m. I am in prefab 4, you know, the one with the hole in the roof. I have just seen the face of some strange boy at the window. He is not in school uniform, but is dressed in ragged clothes, and has the wanderer look in his eyes. His hair is scraggy and looks as if it has just been half eaten by a wild cat. It's almost as bad as your wig. Wait till I take a closer look. Yes, I think it's human all right. More than we said for you, I suppose. Perhaps the missing link. Perhaps I should ring the biology department in the university in case some Darwin enthusiasts might be interested. At the moment, the creature is just staring in, but it is distracting the pupils in the class, who find it amusing. They are beginning to refer to it as Wolf Bod. What should I do, I wonder? Will I ask him to go away? I'm undecided. 10:20. The children think it might be a werewolf. I told them not to be ridiculous. Werewolves are like principals. They never show themselves in the daytime. The only chance you have of spotting them is when the moon is full. I have often thought, you know, my dear principal, of coming back to the school after dark, just to see if you perhaps prowl the school grounds at night. Well, you're so seldom seen in the daytime, I just wondered if by some chance you were working shift hours. I must ask the caretaker if he has seen you around at night time. Maybe I could make a nocturnal appointment and we could howl at the moon together. 10:25. I'm no longer undecided. Wolf Boy has started banging on the windows. Not wishing to leave the classroom and risk an altercation with this strange creature, I have indicated to him by means of a hand signal that he is to go away. But he clearly cannot even understand sign language. This child would make Mowgli look like something out of Boyzone. He has placed his mouth against the window. explain his lips against the fire, and grating his teeth on the pain. I can't help noticing how few teeth he has. Isn't there any free dental care in this country anymore? 1022. Wolfie has started banging again. We are trying to ignore him, but the more we do, the louder he bangs. I opened the door a minute ago and asked him to go away again. Well, I say asked, but it was more like an hysterical shriek, I suppose, because a cat who was nearby fled in alarm towards distant trees. Wolfie, however, didn't move, unfortunately, but just gave me a toothless grin. I fumbled in my bag, and after a moment he did move off admittedly. I think it was my little nail scissors that did the trick. I feel its curved shape and the gesture I made with it definitely played a big part in his decision to move off. I think waving it under his nose in the most provocative fashion was a very good strategy, because even Dumbo Wolfie couldn't fail to understand my intentions. Unfortunately, he didn't go away for long. He walked around the back of the prefab, but as soon as I began teaching again, started peeping in at the back window. No matter what I do, I have a feeling that he will just keep turning up. This boy is a bad penny. In fact, I suspect he is not the full shilling. 10:35. It is now time for the morning break. Thank heavens I have let the children into the yard. There is no sign of Wolf Boy. Perhaps he has gone away in fear of the children. Why is Wolfie? We'll write soon. Yours, etc. Maybe home.
Short poem, and as we're in another sonnet, and as we're in a pub, I decided to write one about drink. It's called The Last Sup, which is only just because it's a bad poem anyway. Okay. So that is then, you two take a drop of booze, a pint of plain your only man, or Murphy's Stout, or even Beamish in which a corkman's snout might snuddle. But if you could use the exotic ooze of Sapphire Bombay Gin, Mexican tequila before the flies sluice their thing in it, you might yet settle for a Bloody Mary, diced with Thai Mine Mix, fresh house made, with fairy coconut milk, splashed with Contro and Mumbo Jumbo juice. But back here it is Jack Daniels, Powers, Paddy, even Carlsberg, who knows, probably the best lager in the state, and Bass, Smithwick, Dutch Gold, wine from Liedenberg, who fears to mix the grain with the grape. But whether draft, bottle, goatskin, tumbler, nipple, the best of all is a regular double, triple, tipple.